Are you wanting to live a life with more clarity and happiness? I'm Tammy Hill, a licensed marriage and family therapist, certified sex educator, wife, mother, and grandmother. I am also an optimist. I strive to live my life on purpose, with purpose. I'm here to inspire people to do the things that inspire them. Live Your Why means to align your core values with the way you want to spend your time. Living My Why includes bridging the gap of understanding sex as both a sacred marital act and as pleasurable, passionate energy that adds zest and happiness to life. I want you to embrace sexual joy without shame. Integrating your sexual nature for goodness will bring you strength, joy, and peace. Join me this season for the Live Your Why podcast, and together we can live a life full of passion and purpose. Have you ever found yourself wondering, why sex? Why would our Heavenly Father create us in such a way that we needed to have sex in order to have children or in order to fully bond and connect as husband and wife? This is a question I get actually quite frequently in therapy. Why sex? Today on the program, I've invited licensed marriage and family therapist Brandi Harris to come on, and we have a profound conversation about why sex is God's plan. You will not want to miss this episode. Hi, this is Tammy Hill, and this is the Live Your Why podcast. Today, I am talking with Brandi Harris, who is a licensed marriage and family therapist, and we are going to talk about why sex. Why is sex the plan for God's children? So, Brandi, thank you so much for being here with me.
You're welcome. I'm glad to be here.
I'm glad you're here, too. I admire you and your work. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your education and why this is a passionate area for you?
Sure. So, yeah, I have a master's degree. I've been counseling for a little over 15 years now. I love my work. I have worked with quite a diverse population, and I live in the South. I'm actually in Arkansas, and a lot of my clientele are conservative, grew up religious, and what I noticed is that over the past few years when I've been in this specific area, that I had a lot of clients who were confused, frustrated, hurt regarding sexuality. And even if I don't know something about what someone's concerned about, I immediately am researching. So I was, you know, I had my education from my graduate work, but, you know, I'm always looking for immediate resources. And so, you know, what resources were out there? Who was teaching what? You know, could I get them some good education, some healing books or programs? Or, and what was happening is that I would, every time I found a resource, I was unhappy with it. There were a lot of more like scientific, not a lot, but a little bit of scientific documents and books that I could refer to, but they were incomplete, I would say, in terms of talking about value and the relational aspects of sex. And then I would find Christian resources that were what I would say is just very insufficient as well. They often were not backed by science. They were just somebody's ideas, or using the Bible or some other sacred text to promote an idea that they had that was actually harmful and hurtful to the people who are hearing it. And so just finding all of that, I was very frustrated. So over time was just trying to collect those things that were true and were helpful and put them together and trying to give those to clients as I could in my own packaged way. And then my church actually independently from that work came to me and said, hey, I think our body would really benefit from some better sex education. Would you be willing to engage with that? And I said, absolutely. I'd love to help with that. Yeah. Went through the process of trying to come up with a good curriculum that I could give. Through that process, developed a workbook because I always like to put something in people's hands so they can do some work on their own as well. So that's kind of how it came together and I got interested in it. I just, anytime I see people hurting, I want to find a way to help. So that was it.
You have a big, beautiful heart. I love that. Tell us more about your workbook that you created. I have a copy of it, and I think it is excellent. There were many things in it that made me think in a different way than I have thought before. From my religious perspective, I'm also Christian. I know we don't belong to this exact same denomination or faith, but I really appreciated the thoughtfulness of your workbook. So tell my listeners a little bit about that.
Sure. So I started with a very broad perspective and trying to give my audience a view of what a lot of people were going through. Because I think a big part of the problem is that people are very isolated in their experiences and hidden in their pain. And so one of the things I wanted to do was just show them, here's what people are saying. This is what people are experiencing. And then to validate their potential experiences. You know, if they had heard hurtful messages, if they were experiencing shame, if they were, you know, really struggling with sexual connection in their life. So started there, then went straight into looking at the way some of the culture's messages have been damaging, looking at specific things that are said, how our system, our broader cultural system works to make sex hard and painful for a lot of people. And then also to look at Bible verses that are often used in a weaponizing way or way to harm or oppress rather than a way to reveal God's goodness. And so went into the more, I mean, you might think of those as negative parts of the experience, but I really wanted to validate people's experiences and kind of shine some light on what has gone wrong. How did we get here? Then I moved into more, I would say, more truthful or very healing, a helpful approach to scripture, to the broader understanding of who God is, looking at who God is and how good he is and what he's looking for in connection with us, and looking at some very specific scientific data on how the human body works, which for me personally, I always say that the creation reflects the creator. And so looking at how the body works is actually, and it can be an act of worship, right? Mm-hmm. Like, wow, this is incredible. Like, God made us like this, and we can connect because he made us like this, and it's good. And also just, it's fascinating. Sex research is fascinating to me. The way that humans are able to connect with one another and even themselves through sexual exploration and sexual connection is just, it's gorgeous. It's beautiful, mm-hmm. right? And then we ended with just kind of a deeper or a broader picture of intimacy overall that absolutely can be a sexual experience, but is also very, very emotional and very relational, and wanted to draw a bigger, better picture than I think the culture currently draws about connection. You know, we think of a lot of the culture spends a very, I would say, shallow version of sex, mm-hmm. whereas God designed it to be a very deep, broad, and all-encompassing experience that helps us connect rather than just a physical act or a moment of pleasure, that
right.
kind of thing.
Right. And the name of your workbook is?
Yes, ma'am. It is The Truth About Holy Sex, mm-hmm. a workbook for people who love Jesus and want to love sex.
I love it. I just love it. That is so thoughtful. And now that you've created this workbook and it's obviously the curriculum that your church is using, have you seen some significant change in the couples within your denomination?
Yes. So this has been really cool. We had about 120 people who attended for 6 weeks to do the curriculum. And we actually took that, not just the workbook, but the whole curriculum is actually an online course now, so other people can take it as well. But the coolest thing that started happening at the very beginning, I mean, from day one, which you should have seen everybody walking in the door the first time, right? Like everybody's just got their head down and they not even looking each other in the eye. And, you know, I can't believe we're all here to talk about this.
Yeah.
But even after that very first night, heads started coming up. People started looking each other in the eye. There was just an overall lighter feeling of, we do not have to be afraid and ashamed anymore. And I heard from women who said it was very, very empowering to be in a small group. The way we did it was small groups of mixed gender. And we weren't, I want to clarify, we weren't talking about anybody's personal sex life in those groups. We were just beginning an open, honest conversation about sex and sexuality from a very ideological perspective at the beginning. And those public groups never went beyond an ideological conversation. We did encourage people to meet in smaller, same-gendered groups in order to go a little bit deeper. And then we encouraged people to do their individual work and work with their spouse if that was an opportunity for them. So the shame lifted, the conversations started to become lighter, women saying it was very empowering to me and validating to have men in our group just acknowledge these things about women. And I heard men say some pretty powerful things about feeling like they were just set free.
Yeah,
because so many men receive very shaming messages about their sexuality, especially regarding their ability to notice sexuality, you know, notice the body of a woman or notice something that turns them on. That's a very normal, natural thing that happens because of testosterone. And for a lot of men, they were told that because they noticed sexuality, they were immediately lustful. And so there was a lot of shame regarding their own minds, you know, thinking that there's something wrong with me that I noticed this so easily. And they just would come up almost, you know, tears in their eyes saying, thank you for saying how we are. And thank you for saying that there's nothing wrong with me that I notice sexuality, because I've never heard anyone say that before. I've never been had permission to just be human in that way without feeling like I was bad. Mm-hmm. That was the beginning effect. And I would say the long-term effect, I mean, certainly people still come up to me, which we did this 2 years ago now, maybe three. And they still will say, we actually have gone back to our homework questions, you know, a couple. Yeah. We've gone back to our homework questions again this month because we wanted to talk about those things again. And this was just funny and too small of a sample size to claim it as anything. But I tell you what, there was a baby boom in our church about a year later. There was a baby boom, a lot of new babies, which we joked and said it was because of the class, but that was super positive. And I would also just say that the general culture of our small little body there became more open. Mm-hmm. In general, it felt like people relaxed a little bit and were generally more comfortable just having normal conversations and less afraid of each other. And of course it's not perfectly healed, but we're going in the right direction. And I really enjoy and appreciate the connections that were built through the class.
Yeah, it sounds so dynamic and awesome. I would love to be able to do something like you've done to make some shifts in our own church culture. So we're going to pick our brains today about why we think, or maybe we have even some answers, that God created us this way. Sometimes I'm working with a couple, and typically it's the wife that just has a kind of a disgusted idea around sexuality and wants to know why. Why is sex part of God's plan for his children on the earth? So if you were to have someone ask you that question, Brandy, how would you answer it?
Yeah, I think first I need to say that the feeling of sex being disgusting is a common experience for a lot of people for a couple of reasons. One of those being that they are very, I want to say, underdeveloped or young in their development of their own sexuality, such that it feels like brand new territory. And so it's uncomfortable and it is unknown and maybe even feels scary because it's new. And the body actually produces a hormone. I wish I could remember the name of it, but it produces I call it the gross out hormone regarding a lot of sexual things when the body is not aroused. But the moment the body becomes aroused, that gross out hormone gets shut off. So if you were talking about a woman who has not had any, maybe very many at all, experiences of arousal, then of course, when she looks at sex, she's going to be grossed out. Her body's actually telling her to be grossed out because it's foreign and new and different, and it's a part of the body's mechanism to protect her from engaging in something that is vulnerable and risky if it were to be with an unsafe partner. Mm-hmm. So I just want to validate that part. The other part is that it's very commonly, sex is very commonly a traumatic experience, especially for women. And this is not to say that sex is designed that way or that it has to be that way. But unfortunately, in our culture, we know that many, many women are experience either sexual abuse or some sort of predatory behavior towards them, even if it's not full-on intercourse or rape. It's unwanted sexual advance. And so their bodies learn, I've got to protect myself, I've got to be very aware, and I've got to do what I can to get away from that. Then, I mean, I feel so sad about this because sometimes then they find a partner who is very good to them and very safe and would love to care for them in a very positive way, but their body really struggles to make that shift because it's an innate ability to protect. So I just want to validate that gross outness, that there's nothing wrong with them, but there is probably some healing that needs to happen.
Right.
Some growth and development that they can get to the point of actually enjoying the experience or wanting the experience. Now, if I'm going the rational route and just wanting to talk to her brain about this, I would want to say God designed sex in a very vulnerable, intimate way because he wanted to illustrate and give opportunity for us to understand connection in an incredibly intimate way. It is an opportunity. It's an opportunity. It is a metaphor and a beautiful illustration, not only of our vulnerability and weakness and limitedness, but God's good protection and provision for us in that vulnerability and weakness. So we can be in sex when it goes really well, we can be vulnerable. We can be our limited, completely relaxed self and feel loved, appreciated, and wanted, even though we're not performing or producing anything. Mm-hmm. And that is, I mean, who doesn't want to be loved like that, right? Mm-hmm. Where you're loved for exactly who you are, not for what you're producing or what you're performing.
Yeah. I know that I really believe that we are inherent, as human beings, I think we are inherently divinely created with a need to belong, to be chosen, to be desired by a partner romantically. And I do feel that when we're in that vulnerable place sharing and it is good and there is goodness going on, that somehow that taps into that beautiful divine part of ourselves that helps us feel whole and complete and beautiful and all those lovely feelings that are supposed to be associated with sex.
Yes, I absolutely agree with that. It's a very tangible experience of an ideology that we have. You know, we might mentally understand that we want and need that, but struggle to feel that with a God who is sometimes not so tangible. Mm-hmm. And so to have a tangible experience with another human, it's like, oh, I get it now. Mm-hmm. I get it now, even though it's, I'm sure, to the tiniest degree, what it's like to be connected with God like that. I get it now that I can feel this and feel connected.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. So we know that through research that our sexuality largely is what drives our moral development while we're here on earth and growing and learning. Tell us what you feel about that process.
Yeah, I thought about this question quite a bit. You know, I was a philosophy major in college, and so I did a lot of thinking about truth and morality and what motivates us. And if we were to start with this idea that sexuality is deep inside of us, it's an innate part of who we are. then it is also a part of our innate drive and desire. And it also is incredibly sensitive to pain and to affirmation and love. And so when you asked that question, or I looked at it beforehand, I was like, I really think that's where the tie lies. When we experience pain, rejection, fear, then that automatically wires into us what is right and good, or in that case, what is wrong and bad. And then the opposite is also true. If we experience good, if we experience pleasure, joy, affirmation, then our bodies are naturally going to go, that is good. And whatever produces that experience is positive and enjoyable and the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there is definitely a connection, cognitive connection, between what we are feeling maybe is right or wrong, because we have learned about that cognitively. Mm-hmm. And then as it responds to our sexuality, like we might see something that is exciting and causes some type of physiological arousal within our bodies. And we like mm-hmm. the way that feels, because that's a natural good part of being a human. But then mm-hmm. we have this cognitive piece of, well, what is right and what is wrong? And we have to be able to say, this feels good, but in this context, is this good? And then make decisions, hopefully based on our moral judgment and our sound judgment. So I like what you said.
I want to throw in here, one of the chapters in my book is called Context Matters. And I think it's always important to consider that the God we love is the God who knows when to go and the God who knows when to stop. And we have historical evidence, you know, the stories of the Bible tell of our God knowing when to go and when to stop. You know, he creates for 6 days and then he stops. He punishes Israel for their bad choices and then he relents. You know, it's this go and stop, and he has self-control, demonstrates that. And I think that's the key right there. We may be drawn, and as humans, and maybe the effects of sin, we may be drawn to greed or overconsumption of really anything. But because of our Heavenly Father, because of our connection with God himself, we know that there is a time to go and a time to stop. And practicing our sexuality with appropriate guardrails or appropriate context is actually what makes it a fruitful experience rather than just a damaging experience either direction, right? Either a damaging in that we never get to experience goodness, or a damaging experience because we're doing too much in the wrong direction.
100% agree with that. So well said. I'm going to ask you a question and then we're going to go to a little break. If sex is part of God's plan, why is there so much fear and shame associated when people feel sexual desire and arousal?
Hi, I'm Hank Smith.
And I'm Tammy Hill. Many of you, including countless young men's and young women's leaders, have requested that we do another teen dating boot camp, similar to the one we did last year.
As professors at BYU, we have seen the many challenges that students experience when it comes to making friends and dating. Tammy and I think that so many of these struggles could be eliminated if these students understood some of the basics for having successful dating experiences.
Hank and I looked at our calendars. We found one day, literally one day, that we could both come together for this event. And do you know what? It happens to be an extra day in 2024. We're actually going to host this on leap year, February 29th.
So get ready. You don't need to feel clueless about dating any longer. We want to help you grow your inner confidence to make friends and learn how to navigate the teenage dating world.
So this February 29th, leap year, join Hank and I for the ultimate teen dating boot camp. Make 2024 different. Figure out how to socialize and have fun dating while holding on to your core values. There's no need to wait another 4 years or until the next leap year to figure out how to date like a boss.
Purchase your tickets for this virtual event at TammyHill.com. Come as individuals, friends, families, or even as a youth activity. Just come. We want to help you unravel the mysteries of dating so you can more easily make friends with people your age.
Once you get your ticket, Hank and I will send you a link for this virtual boot camp to be held Thursday, February 29th, 2024, from 6 to 8 p.m. Mountain Time. Come learn with us. You don't want to have to be confused when it comes to dating. We are back with Brandi Harris, talking a little bit about why is sex part of God's plan. So, Brandi, if sex is part of the plan, why do we feel so much fear and shame when we feel arousal or desire for sex?
Yeah. So, unfortunately, sexuality is not able to avoid the effects of sin, just like anything else we're currently experiencing on earth. And I, as much as I don't like talking about sin because it often increases shame,
right?
One of the best ways that helps me to understand the effects of sin is kind of like thinking about it like a sickness, where if we had a rose bush and it was able to produce and flourish exactly as it was designed, it probably wouldn't even have thorns, right? Like it would be beautiful. It would be clean. It would be fruitful, you know, producing exactly what it needed to do. But if the rosebush has a disease, if it's sick, then it is not beautiful and it doesn't produce goodness. Maybe it produces one beautiful little flower, but all the other flowers are shriveled or there's brown spots on the leaves or whatever it is. And sexuality is the same way. It absolutely has been affected by sin. And so even if it's designed for good, I think it has to go through the refining process of an experience with God, just like anything else does. We're all going through a process of redemption that has begun but has not ended yet. You know, the theological idea of already but not yet. You know, the good work has begun, but it has not been completed yet. And so often that's what people are experiencing, that shame and that pain. They're feeling the effects of sin on their sexuality, not necessarily because of what they have done, although it could be because of what they've done. Often it's the effect of sin that they're experiencing rather than the goodness in the original design.
Yeah. I a couple of thoughts with that. And one is, I want to make sure everyone listening understands that because you experience sexual arousal or because you're desiring sex, that is not sinful. That is normal and natural. And I believe it's a really good part of who you are. It's something to control and to manage and utilize in a way that's going to be productive and aligned with what you want to become. But it's certainly because you have these experiences where your body responds a certain way, or you feel excited or curious about something, that is not sinful behavior at all. You have no need to feel ashamed or worried if you have those type of experiences. We all do. Mm-hmm. The second thing I was thinking of, and this is particularly, I don't know about your particular congregation, but for my congregation, although I believe we have really terrific people who have absolutely beautiful hearts and would do anything for anyone, I believe that the pleasure aspect of sexuality is very frightening. And we have a hard time growing up around the idea of sexual pleasure. It's a little bit like the immaturity, maybe you mentioned a little earlier, Brandi, that as we teach our children and as we lead out in teaching in our congregations, I think we are uncomfortable talking about sexual pleasure. And so we make it like a cut and dry. You don't do this until you're married, or you can never do this when you're dating. And so it becomes this fearful thing rather than something that these experiences and the pleasure that you can derive from this is good. And it's something that bonds you together in marriage. It's not anything you need to be afraid of. I wish we had a little more maturity in our leaders, that they could sit and talk comfortably about sexual pleasure.
You know, I actually had a very long conversation with my pastor one time. Honestly, it was more of a theological discussion than anything about this idea that sometimes what we hear from church is more about how bad the world is than about how good our God is. And that imbalance of spending so much energy on the badness of the world, I think, has scared everyone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know we have to treat this with such kid gloves because, of course, we don't want anyone to be getting hurt. But when we make our entire theology or our entire pursuit of life about avoiding the bad things, and we forget that there is great fruit and joy in pursuing and enjoying the good that we already have in our good God, we really miss a huge opportunity to connect with Him and with each other. It's very powerful to me to think about, even for example, the Ten Commandments and the way that God operates with the Israelites in the desert. What He's doing, if you understand the context of that story, He's going through systematically each one of the gods that Egypt worshiped and showing the Israelites how He is not like that God. And every single one of those gods produced fear in the people. Be afraid for this reason, be afraid for that reason, be afraid for this reason. You know, those gods, their love was dependent on people's performance and production. Whereas the God of the Israelites is saying, I am not those gods. I'm the God who gives rest. I'm the God who loves you for who you are. And you can rest in that and you can enjoy connection with me before you have produced or performed in any way. And if we can lean into that idea that God is so good, we do not have to be afraid. I challenge any of your listeners to just Google, and Google is a small way to do your research, but to Google, how many times does the Bible say, do not fear? Mm-hmm. I just dare them to Google that because it is such a prominent message. Do not fear, do not fear, do not fear. Now, does that mean that we won't or can't get hurt? No, but it means that our good God is with us and He's a good shepherd. So we don't have to be afraid. We get to be those dumb, frankly, meek sheep who can't protect themselves. And that's okay. Not because we're going to be able to protect ourselves or figure it out, but because our shepherd is so good. He's so good, we literally can relax and enjoy His leading without having to be afraid of everything coming our direction, including lust and sin and our own desire and whatever it is that has currently mm-hmm. scared us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to Google that and see how that is. I think that sounds like a great idea. I agree. Fear doesn't come from God. The faithfulness in Jesus Christ comes from God. Mm-hmm. Fear mm-hmm. does not. And so mm-hmm. teaching with a fearful or shameful directive is mm-hmm. not the way God would teach. Okay, so we have these wonderful people who maybe had a lot of fear and shame in their lives as they've grown up and, you know, understood around sexuality. And I want to make sure loud and clear that sexual conservatism is just wise. Mm. It's wise spiritually, but it's also wise in so many other ways, particularly for women with pregnancy and, you know, unplanned pregnancies, STIs. There's so many things and emotion, not even to talk about the emotional aspect there, but it is just wise as well. We have these young couples and they get married, and this idea around sexuality has been, they've been apprehensive around it. And now they're trying to move together through this fear and shame. What recommendations do you have for these couples as they strive to get on the same page, regardless mm-hmm. of these ideas that they've had all their lives?
Sure. So one of the first recommendations I have is to slow down. Mm-hmm. I think when we're brought up in a conservative culture, and often when we have this kind of history of shame or fear, even if we're ready and want to open the door to sexuality with a spouse, just remember that that is the first day you opened the door, and you don't have to run a marathon from that point. Especially for the female body. The female body becomes aroused much slower than the male body. And so taking your time and checking in with your body on how it's doing and pacing with your own body, rather than trying to rush to a standard of expectation, whether the expectation is set by yourself, your spouse, your pastor, your pastor's wife, any church leader, you know, pornography, heaven forbid, you know, like whatever standard you've got in your mind that says you need to hurry up and get there, you're going to have to fight that, because the body just doesn't respond that way. It needs to go slow in order for it to enjoy the experience and in order to feel safe. If you go too fast, what happens is that the body tries to protect you by disassociating. So basically if we could see it visually, your body and your mind would disconnect from itself. And you would be, you know, this bodiless head or this headless body, because the body's saying, no, 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 too fast, too fast, too fast. Okay, just shut it off. Pretend like it's not happening. And then you've got potentially two bodies that are melding together in a physical way, but the mental, emotional, and I would even say spiritual connections are immediately severed because it's been rushed. And now it's become a traumatic experience. And now you're going to have to repair that. You know, okay. You just have made it harder for yourself. Whereas if you can slow down, trust your body a little bit, listen to your body, and be patient with one another. Be patient with yourself. I mean, I have heard a million women say, what's wrong with me? Why can't I hurry up?
Right.
And I honestly, I don't hear men say that about their wives nearly as much. A lot of men are more patient than we give them credit for, but women, and I can claim this was true for myself in my early marriage. I've been married over 20 years now. I was such a performer. I'm like, I've got to hurry up. I've got to get there, you know? And that pressure I even put on myself made it even harder.
Right, right.
To relax and enjoy my experience. So the grace to slow down is my first and best recommendation. And then you said this a moment ago, but I really encourage couples to be curious about the other person's experience, because it very often is not the same experience that's happening in your body. So ask, what's going on with you? How is your body feeling? What are you wanting? What are you needing? And then also honesty. Mm-hmm. I think because there's such a drive to perform, sometimes there's this temptation to, frankly, lie about what we're experiencing internally, because we don't want to displease our partner or harm their fragile ego. You know, we're being so delicate with them and their feelings that we are frankly disrespecting and dishonoring our own bodies. So being honest, even if it's hard to be honest, even if you have to, I want to put this in air quotes, but speak sign language, right? Like even if you have to just move a body part, move it over. No, not there, here.
Yeah.
Even that is better than no communication at all. Mm-hmm. That is honest, saying this is what I'm experiencing and this is what I need or want. And then curious about them. What are you experiencing? What do you need or want? Slowing that whole process down so that you can, both of you, actually enjoy the experience, because I honestly believe that that's what everybody wants, mm-hmm. or let's say 99% of people, right? There are very few spouses out there who would say, you know what I really want is a great experience for myself and I don't care about you.
Right.
Most spouses really enjoy the whole process better if both people are having a good time, if both people are enjoying what's happening, it's much more satisfying for both.
100%. And I agree. Slowing down. I often tell premarital couples, you don't need to have sex on your wedding night. You can totally go through your whole honeymoon. Just wait until you're ready. Because if you're rushing that, the female body's working against itself to be able to relax and enjoy this experience. And that, like you said, is traumatic. And now you've got trauma to work through afterwards, which we don't want to have to do that. So I agree, Brandy, slowing down. I think your idea of asking each other and being honest with each other is paramount as well. So good. How do you think a marriage relationship can be blessed with greater sexual connection?
You know, I think one of the things that has to happen in order to have greater sexual connection is that we have to broaden the scope of what that means. So many people that I talk to have always thought of sex as, in our field, we call it intercourse or penis and vagina or PIV. And they shrink what is sex to just that act. And unfortunately, when they do that, they are cutting out not only a lot of physical activities that could be very sexual and very enjoyable physically, they're also cutting out all of the mental and emotional pieces of intimacy and sexual connection that are wildly satisfying.
Agreed.
Utilizing fun, creativity, curiosity, fantasy, desire, storytelling, role playing. I mean, I don't know how open your audience is, but there is such a wide, beautiful variety of ways to sexually engage with your partner that absolutely can be still sacred activities because they are done with and for each other and for the glory of God. You're still producing a very good connection by opening up that experience to more than intercourse. And so if they want things to get better, they have to broaden that and to think a little bit wider. And there are plenty of educators like yourself and even several sexual sex educators that are phenomenal at their job that they can give you fodder to discuss. And I'm not saying that you go and do everything that they tell you you can do, but at least opening the door and saying, what else is out there? What's possible? What sounds interesting to you and what feels interesting to me? What do we both feel safe about? You know, just being curious. And like I said earlier, because we have such a good God, I think you can trust his guidance and direction that if you start to get into something that either one of you doesn't feel good about, then you say no and you walk away and you go to the next thing. It's not pressure to go into those other territories, but it's just trusting God enough to say, what else is this? What else could this be? What did you design in each of us that could draw us into new, interesting territory that isn't off limits? It's been open and free the whole time. We just haven't ever explored there before. Mm-hmm. And checking each of those with your connection with God to make sure that you do feel like you have integrity in that behavior or that choice.
Mm-hmm. So good. And I think I would just add one little piece is when you're feeling apprehensive or unsure of what you should be doing this way as you expand your horizons, which is such a great idea, I also would challenge you to ponder where you got the messages around that particular activity. I sat with a client just last night and they've been married close to 30 years and have never used any type of sexual toy or vibrator. And she is at a stage in life, perimenopausal, where it's very difficult for her to achieve orgasm. It takes more than an hour sometimes for that to happen. And they had always believed that it was totally wrong to have a vibrator or something like that in their marriage, which is okay. They lived what they believed was best. I challenged her to start thinking, where did she ever hear that? Where is that said? Where'd that message come from? And she couldn't say it came from anywhere. And I said, well, ponder a little bit more on that, because if you're really just assuming things, you're making this much more challenging for each other to enjoy this because of assumptions rather than truth, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think what I keep thinking of is the conversation that Jesus has in the Old Testament, or I'm sorry, in the New Testament with the Pharisees and the Sadducees. And he's like, woe to you, snakes, for putting heavy chains on these people. You're making it so hard for them to follow me. You're giving them these extra rules about whether or not they can follow me if they check all these 2,500 boxes, right? He's like, woe to you. I'm free to follow. So take those chains off and listen carefully. You know, like the idea is because you are connected to God yourself, you can have that conversation.
And absolutely.
I absolutely respect church authority and recognize that the community does have valuable things to say about what's healthy and what's not healthy. But having heard one sermon or one talk one time, or even from several people, and never questioning it, never going back to it, never actually discerning for yourself is frankly irresponsible, because you own your own spirituality and you're the one responsible for picking your head up and looking forward and seeing where is Jesus and how do I best follow him.
Yeah. Exactly. And you own, as a couple, you own this sexual relationship. No one else's, mm-hmm. no one else can decide how this is going to look. You get to be the creators of this between the two of you. So, mm-hmm. Brandy, I have thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. You make me think. I think you're brilliant. And so thank you so much for joining me on this podcast.
You're welcome.
It is the Live Your Why podcast, so I always like to ask my guests to kind of wrap up telling my audience your why. So, Brandy Harris, what is your why?
I love this question. I was reading through the questions last night and thinking through them, and I spent a good 30 minutes just kind of pondering, what is my why? It's such an important thing to come back to personally. My why, who I want to be, is 100% myself. And when I say that knowing that I have a creator God who created me both uniquely and for connection in community. So I love the analogy of the body of Christ, you know, that our connection is really a conglomerate of body parts, all of which are unique and fit together just perfectly, doing the very things that they are designed to do. And we don't want any one of those body parts trying to do another body part's job. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, I mean, I'm 45 years old. I am still figuring out who I am. And I feel like every year goes by, I have discovered new things and I am building up the courage to be the person I'm designed to be every day of my life. And I like who I am at this point in my life. I like who I am and I like who I'm designed to be. And I love that I have the freedom and grace to slowly be transformed more and more into who I was originally designed to be and where I can best glorify my creator and therefore love people through that and contribute to the work of rebuilding the kingdom.
I love it. I love it so much. Tell people how they can find you.
Yes, ma'am. My website is ittakesabreath.com, as in it takes a breath to start healing. And I do, like I said, I have some online courses. I have a few books that I've written. Love doing these podcasts. And I am on quite a few of the social media networks. So you can find me all of those places, but all through my website, ittakesabreath.com.
Awesome. Thanks again, Brandy. It's been awesome being with you.
Yes, I've loved it.